You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, political expert and radio broadcaster Jay Amernick, and me, journalist in all media Heather Val Goss, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern at politicalfixradio.com. Unwrapping is all about peeling back the layers of the onion to discover the truth. And that's one of the things we do here on The Political Fix. I'd like to introduce my co-host to you. Jay Amernick is a radio talk show host and strategic planner who helps clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Heather. Good to see you, even though we're only a few miles apart. We're in separate locations.
Exactly, yeah. And Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur with a degree in philosophy, which led to his development called The Solution, and Pentonomics, which is the philosophy behind The Solution. Good morning from Colorado, Rick.
Good morning, Heather and Jay.
Good morning.
So what have you guys been up to lately? We haven't talked for a few weeks. What's going on in your lives? Jay?
I'll start. Okay. Yeah. So one of the other things I do, it's sort of in my bio, it's a little further down, is that I work with Israeli tech companies, and I try to get them to come here to Nevada and open up their U.S. shop. And right now we're very excited, actually. There's two big projects we're looking at. One is an agriculture project, so we'll be able to grow fruits and vegetables here in Nevada, which is, if you're not from Nevada, you don't understand, there's no agriculture here. And the other project...
There's no water there.
I'm getting to the second project.
I guess if you want farmers importing from Israel, but there's a lot of sand too, I guess that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, they should bring some camels. I think we need camels in this desert. Seriously.
There's a possibility. And the other project is the water desalinization project.
Taking
water directly from the Pacific Ocean, processing it and getting it here to the valley. And, well, actually to the state of Nevada all around, because water rights is a huge political issue here. It's actually number two behind gaming.
That's the Will Ferrell Move the Ocean campaign, I believe. Is that right?
Something along those lines, yes.
Yeah. Okay, and me, I'm just doing the family thing. I'm working on the revolution. I'm working on the business. So doing all those kind of things.
Okay, like what? What kind of business?
The business, right now it's called twoheads.com. We introduce business owners to each other so that they can help each other grow their businesses. And then when they want a new partner, we reintroduce them to someone else. And so it's a real simple concept.
Okay, so basically it's like giving business people accountability partners to help them move forward.
Exactly.
Okay. And that was the former Profit.
It used to be called Profit. We actually have yet another name coming up because we're testing all these things. And so in the future, it'll be called BizBud.com. BizBud.
Okay.
Because everybody needs a BizBud.
Everyone needs a BizBud. Yeah, I agree. That's a great concept.
Yeah. Okay, the problem with twoheads.com is like, what's the tagline? Think with your other head. No, your other head.
It's a little too early to be working blue.
Yeah. our theory was two heads are better than one, but it didn't come off that way. So, anyway.
Right. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, I've been just doing a lot of different shoots lately, shooting at a lot of different locations. I mean, last week I was shooting a construction site, shooting the process of how this construction project is coming together and getting testimonials from the house owner. And before that, I was shooting at all these different seminars, interviewing experts and interviewing vendors, interviewing business people and entrepreneurs. So it seems like every week I'm just interviewing someone totally different.
Well, that's good.
That's another thing that happens in Nevada. We get a lot of events, a lot of people coming through, and a lot of experts to meet with and talk with and hobnob with.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
There's always something, and there's a lot of different pieces to what's going on in Nevada, too. There's sort of the business side of it, which you just talked about, and then there's the kind of the entertainment side as well, which is doing a lot of things as well.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I think most people tend to think of Vegas as being the entertainment side. They think of the shows, they think of the gambling, they think of the slogan, that ubiquitous slogan, which is no longer true. What happens here does not stay here, people. It does not.
No,
it's all over the web. Yeah. So what happens here ends up on Facebook, ends up on YouTube, ends up on Twitter, just so you know, fair warning. Yeah. But I think that the more fascinating side of here is what goes on with the locals and the entrepreneurs and the business owners, which is a completely, totally different side.
Yeah, I agree.
So what about you, Rick? Do you ever get out of your house, or you just like stay there?
No, not really. I'm an antisocial basement, you know, change the world kind of dude. So, you know, with a philosophy degree, you know, it's not about the real world. It's about making stuff up and then, you know, seeing if you can convince other people.
Okay.
But isn't
so
it,
you make stuff sort of... up and then you bring it into the real world and you try to convince people that it's made up stuff. Yeah, okay.
Well, no, the whole goal of philosophy is to understand the real world. But to do that, you have to have all these debates that are like these college dorm room beer-fueled debates that don't mean anything. And then every couple hundred years, philosophers break through. And really, I'm being silly, but really, there's something to that. Isn't why we've been having the same darn political debate for like 100 years between the fiscal conservatives and the social progressives. And there's been a couple of world wars in between to take our mind off of it. But in ways, they're all related, of course. You know, so but there's a reason these things take time, you know, centuries or at least decades. It's not easy. You can't test it. You got to think about it and then convince people, and then you try it, and then you know, 100 years later, you see how it worked. So it's a very different thing than, let's say, creating a new packaging for dish. You know, Procter and Gamble can do that in a year or two, and then test it 15 different ways. With philosophy, it's generational.
Okay, but do you really want to wait 100 years to find out if any of your ideas worked?
No, of course not. Well, here's the good news. John Locke came up with the core ideas of freedom that propelled 100 years later James Madison and our founding fathers to do the American experiment, okay, the United States of America. That took 100 years. And then Karl Marx comes along and says, that's not going to last. We need to do this kind of thing. And that'll replace capitalism, he thought. And it took 50 years for that to be tried, 50 years between Karl Marx and Lenin. And then so here we are another 160 years later or whatever it is, and we have a new model that kind of merges freedom and fairness together, the Pentanomic model. And I'm going to predict 25 years until it happens, because it's, you know, time is happening faster now. We have the YouTube internet environment where, you know, we can go viral and suddenly we're the news story, and then we get a big following and then it happens. So I'm optimistic. I'm going to bet 25 years.
Okay. So you'll be alive to see that. That's cool. Yeah.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah.
Much better.
So, Heather, what's the top story of the day?
Well, the top story is the Drug Enforcement Administration broadened its national crackdown today on synthetic drug manufacturers, wholesalers, and retailers as federal agents served hundreds of search and arrest warrants in at least 25 states. Agents served warrants at homes, warehouses, and smoke shops beginning early in the morning today, says DEA spokesman Rusty Payne. The largest single operation was a statewide effort in Alabama, and agents were also active in Florida and New Mexico, among other states. The DEA has been cracking down on synthetic drugs, including so-called bath salts, spice, and Molly, since the drugs first gained widespread popularity years ago. About five to 7 years ago, the agency responsible for enforcing federal drug laws moved to ban five chemicals used to make synthetic marijuana blends, including K2, Spice, and Blaze. And since then, drug manufacturers have continued to modify their formulas and develop new chemical mixtures. The agency is now broadly focused on Chinese chemical manufacturers and the distributors, wholesalers, and retailers that are in the United States. There's also a growing concern about where the money's going. Investigators have tracked hundreds of millions of dollars in drug proceeds being sent to Yemen, Syria, Lebanon, and Jordan. U.S. authorities have long worried about criminal and terrorist groups in the Middle East using drug trafficking to fund illicit activities. And last year, the DEA and Customs and Border Protection wrapped up a 7-month investigation that ended in 150 arrests and the seizure of about a ton of drugs. So, not good news for drug dealers today, that's for sure.
or retailers, apparently.
Or retailers, yeah, drug retailers.
Or the wholesaler, the middleman is getting screwed on this one. Wow, okay. To me, 150 arrests, given the scope of what this seems like, doesn't seem like a lot.
I guess not after a 7-month investigation.
No, I mean, I would think this would be like, you know,
it really is a small world. That you know, if they're arresting the right people.
That's what I was thinking, really if they're arresting like the top, the leaders.
Well, then they should have put it like that as opposed to, you know, after this huge dragnet, we got 150 guys, you know, instead of, I don't know.
Okay, well, the issues I wrote down related to this that we should discuss after the break are the whole question of legalizing drugs. You know, that here in Colorado, that's an issue because we just legalized marijuana last year. The fact that China is involved is kind of interesting. It makes you wonder if that's a state-run effort to destabilize us or if it's just, Chinese entrepreneurs under the radar. Then there's the whole issue of, like, capitalism. Like there's always all these, evil capitalists doing stuff. And that kind of trend, you know, that the spectrum pushes towards the outlaw side. We can discuss that. And the fact that greed is never going to go away. We can talk about greed and capitalism and how that all fits in. So some really good issues that I wrote down.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds awesome. Okay, so let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we will discuss those things. We'll see you back soon on The Political Fix. Welcome back to the show. This is The Political Fix with me, Heather Vale Goss, and my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Before the break, we were talking about the top story, which was about the Drug Enforcement Administration cracking down on drugs today. And Rick had some topics that we're going to rip apart, unwrap, and discuss. So, Rick, do you want to go over again what those topics were?
Sure. Well, yeah, just as I was listening to you there, going through the story, I just wrote down some notes. The first one is legalizing drugs, because so we got all this crime going on. You know, people are breaking bad all over the place apparently, and some people say the problem is too many things are illegal. We should just legalize it. Kind of like prohibition failed. Maybe illegal drugs are failing, and we should just legalize them or some of them, marijuana or whatever. So why don't we start with you guys? Do you guys have any opinions on that?
Well, I'm from Canada, and marijuana is legal there, too. And you know what? I tend to think that a lot of problems, if it's something that's relatively harmless, like marijuana, I find that often more problems are created by banning it. It's almost like as soon as you say, you can't have this, you can't do that, that's when people will find a way around it, and that's when it actually gets out of control and becomes dangerous. It's almost better to legalize it and let people deal with it legally.
How long has it been legal in Canada?
I remember it about 20 years ago when...
That long, really? I haven't heard of that.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was just marijuana. Like, not... They don't legalize everything. Yeah. But, there's head shops.
that you can buy all your paraphernalia, and it's not legal to sell it. It's legal to possess it. So you can't be arrested for having a joint on you or having a small amount. If you're walking around with bricks of it, there's probably a different level where they say, okay, well, now you're a dealer. So now we're going to, yeah.
Yeah, well, if any time there's any kind of prohibition, you know, we had that here in the 1930s, and it caused all kinds of problems and actually ensconced organized crime in our country. To this day, there's organized crime here because of prohibition.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Volstead Act and all that, and clearly everybody wanted to have a drink, to have a, you know, and the, when the government tells you no, especially in America, we tend to get a little bit pissed off and say no, you cannot tell us what to do.
And, right.
And so,
okay. Yeah. Now, on the political philosophy side of the philosophy of Pentonomics, which we'll go into more detail in a little bit later in the show, but just to give you a little hint here, what Pentonomics says is that there are some issues which are, let's call them kind of fundamental core issues, the things that we can know there's a clear answer to, at least according to the philosophy. And then there's issues on top of that where we can say we'll never have a clear answer. It has to be a debate. It has to be a political decision because you can't ever know what the right answer is. And I'm going to say that legalizing drugs or any one particular drug is something like that, where, you know, there's going to be people on both sides here. And I'm also going to say that we're never going to get clarity on this issue until we get the fundamentals right first, okay? Because, like, for example, right now we live, at least here in America, we live in a society where there's a lot of bad incentives. There's a lot of, the government action itself encourages people to kind of work less, and I'm pretty sure studies have shown, I think I read this just 2 weeks ago, that, you know, people who are on welfare of some kind, food stamps, welfare, even other programs that are designed to help stop drug use, those people are more likely to be on drugs because a lot of their other needs are being taken care of, and then they get kind of this low self-esteem, and then they turn to drugs to kind of fill the time and that kind of stuff. So, with all these bad incentives, it's hard to say what the right answer is, because when we fix those incentives, and that's what Pentonomics is all about, that's going to be like a sea change. It changes everything, and we'll have really a different debate because the context will change. So I'm going to say that the issue of legalizing drugs is absolutely appropriate for it. Debate and the question mark, and let's not worry about it too much. It's going to happen. What's going to happen is going to happen, and then let's focus our attention on fixing the fundamentals, draining the swamp, making it more about personal responsibility again, and then we can come back to the drug issue, and we'll be able to discuss it in a better context.
Yeah, and you bring up some good points there, Rick, because obviously no matter what it is, whether it's drugs, whether it's alcohol, whether it's prostitution or anything that some people are against, when you make it available to people, anything that's addictive, some people will go overboard. Some people will not be able to handle themselves. Even gambling here in Nevada, I mean, there's people that sit there gambling day in, day out, and they don't have any money because they gamble it all away. Well, that's going to happen. So it really does come down to helping people become more in control of themselves, really. I mean, like, we're adults. We can't just treat life like a playground. It's like, woohoo, I get access to this, so let's go nuts and go crazy and wreck our health. I mean, like, there's got to be some level of self-accountability at some point.
But I think what you're suggesting, Heather, though, that's going to happen at first. Anytime you open up the floodgates, once it becomes legal, and that's just like any period of reformation. You know, there's a sea change.
The pendulum.
Things get a little nuts, and then eventually, as you again suggest, the pendulum will slow and stop somewhere in the reasoned middle. That's just the way things are. But yes, of course, like, because I was in Denver about a year ago, and walking downtown Denver, the mall, is it 16th Street Mall, 14th Street Mall, Rick?
16th.
Yeah, it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But, you know, there were areas of it where, you know, you took a whiff and I thought I was in a Cheech and Chong movie. and these were not the most, savory characters perpetrating this. So it was a little, but again, that will change, you know, once there's a certain sort of belligerence to, I can do this now, I can do this in public, and there's nothing anybody can do about it.
Right.
Aspect.
You know what else was, legalized in Ontario about 20 years ago, Ontario, Canada? It was legalized around the same time that women can legally go topless on the streets, just like men. So hot day in the summer.
I take back everything bad I ever said about the Canadians.
But there's a point here, because nobody did it. Like, just because we can, there wasn't like all these women just whipping off their tops. It's like we were allowed to, yes, but most women still didn't want to. So,
well,
you know,
that's a different situation, though. If it was,
it's also Canada. Like, you know, if Florida made that law, I think you'd have more opportunity.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
So, if you're listening from Florida, contact your local legislature.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so next issue I wrote down, I mentioned China. I'm not sure we can discuss that too much, but I just have this question. It's like, if China wanted to screw up the U.S., they'd invent new chemicals to make, synthetic marijuana, et cetera, and export them to the U.S. and just mess with us. So I wouldn't be surprised, although I have no clue if that's happening or not.
Well, I would say that in my estimation, there's nothing that goes on in China that the government doesn't know about. Whether they are behind it or they are just tacitly condoning it, I can't say.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, it's an authoritarian state, which it has pockets of insane liberty. I mean, it's really an interesting model. What China has figured out, I believe, this is based on just kind of absorbing news over the years about China, and talking to some PhDs about this too. But what China has figured out, I think, the people in charge, is that democracy has a problem. And the problem with democracy from China's point of view is that it can't make tough decisions. Okay? Every now and then it can, but in general, it can't make those tough decisions. And to run a country well, to run a household well or a business well, sometimes you got to make those tough decisions. And so what China is trying to do, I believe, is trying to get all the advantages of capitalism without all the negatives of and the mess of democracy. And I think they're, given where they came from, I think they're actually doing a pretty good job. And time will tell if they can keep up. I think there's a risk that whenever you have that kind of centralized power, someone bad can come along and abuse that power. However, with what I know about China's the way that people move up in the China power structure, they kind of have to prove themselves before they get promoted. So it's almost like a business. It seems to be working, and at least until it fails, we won't know what the big weakness is. The theory behind Petronomics, and again, we'll talk more about this in just a minute or two or 20, is that there is a way to constrain it can and make it more transparent at the same time, so it can start to make these tougher decisions. And then we'll have the best of both worlds, where we have capitalism and the freedom that comes along with capitalism, and also the freedom and responsibility and tough decision-making that happens when government is being done right, and also the social justice that happens as a result of Petronomics being done right as well. So the goal of Petronomics is to do government right. And I'm going to say that China has part of the answer in terms of setting capitalism free within these constraints. And modern society, in terms of like the U.S., has part of the answer. In terms of democracy, is clearly better, I think, than authoritarianism. But we have to work on that. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that what China's trying to do, there's a great cost to it. Basically, I think I read somewhere where the people didn't believe that a man had landed on the moon. I mean, they keep information from their people. They control the media very tightly. And I don't know. I'm for freedom, even with the negative connotations that sometimes come with freedom, that come with freedom of speech, that come with the right to bear arms. All those things are very important.
I'm going to argue against you, Jay. I'm going to argue against you here because you say there's a great cost, but look at where China's come from. Okay,
where they come from,
it's more and more freedom. They're just dripping the freedom. Russia opened the floodgates of freedom, and I think it cost them.
I guess it's part of the indelible image. In my mind, is them trampling their own people with tanks in Tiananmen Square, and that happened when I was in college, and I will never forget that. And it doesn't seem to me that so much has changed.
No. Compared to Mao, the era of Mao, that's a big improvement. A couple guys crushed with a tank. Big improvement compared to like. How many tens of million dead because you don't like them?
Okay. Well, certainly yes. And I would say, Vladimir Putin's an improvement over Joseph Stalin, but still,
not Gorbachev. He's going the wrong way.
yes and no.
You think Putin's going the right way versus Gorbachev?
What? No. He's going the wrong way from Gorbachev. I'm saying Gorbachev.
Okay.
No, he was a real reformer.
Yeah.
But
was Gorbachev a real smart reformer? Because wouldn't a real smart reformer have done it more like China?
It was a different world back then. I think that there was different pressure from the U.S.
I think
there was more of an ally slash kind of like almost like a frenemy in President Reagan and Margaret Thatcher. And with President Obama, I don't, quite frankly, know what the deal is there. I don't think he's particularly forceful when he should be with Vladimir Putin. And that's just my opinion. So everyone's going to brand me a bigot for that, but because God forbid we be able to criticize our president.
Before we break, though, let's talk about the other couple of points that Rick had. Capitalism and greed will never go away. And, when you put those two things together, that reminds me of what a lot of people equate capitalism with, which is greed. It's always about those rich, greedy bastards. Corporate America is greedy. Those two words often go together. Those two thoughts and concepts often go together.
Yep.
And in my experience, it's not accurate. So
I agree as well. I will say that I have had the pleasure and honor of working for several 501c3s and charities, and I have to tell you the so-called 1% give 90% of the money to these organizations, and they are incredibly generous. And not only that, they don't. And people say, oh well, they're doing it for a tax write-off. Okay, well yes, there is that element. But I will also tell you that they also serve on the boards. Of these organizations. And if you serve on an actual board, there are fiduciary responsibilities, there are articles, there are bylaws, there are things you have to sign, there are meetings that you have to go to. And the rule of thumb is the first thing you do when you get on a board is you figure out how the hell you're going to get off it, because it's a miserable experience. And these guys do it because they really care about these issues. And I've seen guys, again, in the so-called 1% on the far right and on the far left. I in a million years would never call them greedy. I mean, they really care about these issues, and they amass, large sums of money and give a great deal of it away to try to fix what they see are the problems in the world through the 501c3s and the charitable organizations they choose.
Yeah. What do you think, Rick?
Well, I think this is a big topic, and I think it's actually kind of the topic that we're going to cover after the break in terms of introducing the philosophy And I'm just real quickly, I'm going to say that there are five different types of greed, and only five, because there can be greedy individuals, greedy groups or collectives, greedy politicians, that's a little bit different, greedy foreign nations, And also the future, in a sense, is greedy in that it wants stuff. And we have to decide what is theirs and what is ours. And so in a sense, it can reflect back and like we the living. So there are these five dimensions of greed. And capitalism is what we get when we control individual greed and properly incentivize it. But we also have to properly incentivize politicians and collectives and foreign nations and we the living. So I think it's all greed, and it's all got to be incentivized, and we go from there.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that more when we come back, and also an opportunity, if you're listening in and you want to call in and have your say, we'll give you a chance to do that as well. We'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Valgoss here with my co-hosts, Jay Emmernick and Rick Raddatz. Now, if you're listening and you want to chime in with what we're talking about, there's a few different ways you can do that. Call us live at 1-888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or if you have a smartphone, you can go to bbsradio.com and download the app, either for your iPhone or for your Android. And within the app, there's one-click connect. So you can connect to us with one click and ask your questions of Rick or ask your questions of the rest of us and join in the banter, join in the fun. So where we're at now is we were talking about various issues that surrounded the top story today, which is about drug crackdowns in the U.S. And we were talking about capitalism and the concept of greed never going away and how people equate greed with capitalism. And I think, Rick, you had something else to say on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, this ties in nicely to this this pentanomic theory of government. And pentanomic means five economies. Penta meaning five, nomic meaning economy. So we're talking about five different economies here in this pentanomic theory of government. And the most famous economy, of course, is capitalism. Capitalism economizes the resources that we as individuals control or individual companies control. So it's kind of like the private marketplace, if you will. And what capitalism does is it makes sure that everyone knows who owns what. This is your property, this is my property, and so on. That's property rights. And then it uses the free market to set the price of resources. So the price of resources is never what the seller wants. It's never what the buyer wants. It's always something in between. It's kind of what society wants. And by doing that, capitalism helps the society make sure that individual resources are put to their highest and best use on average. There's always exceptions. There's always problems. But better than anything else ever invented. But what Pentanomics says is that capitalism is just the beginning. We also have to improperly incentivize collectives, like our nation as a whole, because our nation as a whole has resources, government resources. We have to properly incentivize politicians, because politicians, they occupy positions of power in our country. That's a resource. A position of power is a resource. And foreign nations have resources. We want to economize them. We want them to use their resources in ways that help us, not hurt us. And then there's also we the living have to economize our resources as a species, because there's a long future. There's hopefully a 10,000-year future or more for humanity. And we're thinking about our generation and our next generation. We're not thinking about 10,000 years. And so we need to economize future resources. And that's Pentanomics. Right? But here's the cool thing. Capitalism already exists that properly incentivizes or economizes individual resources. Democracy already exists that, with elections and free speech, that properly incentivizes more or less politicians to use their resources wisely. A strong national defense plus diplomacy is how we economize foreign resources. We encourage foreign nations to use their resources in our interests. And so all we're missing is the second one, the collective resources or national resources. We have a big argument in this country about how to use government resources. How many resources should be government resources? How big should government be, and how should it be used? That's our whole left-right divide right there. And then we also have to figure out how we as a species are going to come together maturely and learn to live with less. Because if the whole world starts consuming like Americans consume, people predict that's a problem. It's not sustainable. So, and yet we're headed that direction. So That's the pentanomic theory of government, five economies, and three are done, thanks to Janus and our founding fathers and the modern world that copied them. And we got two more to go.
Okay. Rick, can you just take a step back? You're talking a lot about pentanomics, and you're talking, obviously, you know what you're talking about when it comes to politics. But for people that are listening to this show for the first time, they don't know the background. Tell us how you actually came up with pentanomics and cap and prioritize, and why you were inspired to take this political journey.
Yeah, well, back in 2006, I just got mad as hell and said I'm not going to take this anymore.
You know, all right, that sounds like Network. That sounds like a movie.
It was this old movie called Network.
Everyone
should watch it.
And you yelled it out the window.
Every character gets their own time to rant, and I'll be ranting later in the show. But, the main character kind of went nuts and said, it's time to get mad as hell and not take it anymore. And he got everyone to yell it out the window. I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take
it anymore.
I asked myself a question, like, what can I do about it? What can I do? And I thought, the world doesn't need another, political activist or a volunteer for a political party. The world doesn't need another blogger or talk show radio host or journalist or, all of these traditional ways of being involved in helping to change the world. I thought what the world needs is a solution, to do all of those things, but let's have the solution first. And then we can have blogs and radio shows and talk to the journalists and so on about the solution. And so, I have a degree in philosophy. It's from 20 years ago, so I kind of dusted off my degree, and I thought, this is a philosophy problem, okay? Because the free world kind of beat communism in terms of economics. The core idea of communism, the idea of let's all help each other, that's a fundamental idea going away. And yet that's the idea that powers communism in the ideal sense. And it's also the idea that powers the political left. Let's help each other. Some people are on the political left because they want to be helped. Some people are on the political left because they want to help. And yet there's a whole opposition to that. The political right, who says, look, every attempt to help people just either entraps them or wastes money. There's better ways of helping people if you do want to help people. And so there's this big debate. And I recognize it as a philosophy debate. And so I asked myself another question. Okay, I asked myself, where's the answer? Where is the solution? Is it in books? Is it in people, in society, and the wisest among us? Where's the answer? And it occurred to me that society, this is a little thought experiment. Philosophers do this. Society is like society is like a ball of putty.
Okay.
And it's being bounced against the wall of natural law.
Oh, it's silly putty.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. Silly putty. So it's being bounced against, because natural law doesn't change. However, the world, whatever the laws are that govern the physics and so on, whatever they are, that doesn't change. And so society is running against this wall and bouncing off. And if so, things were missing. It's kind of like an imprint of natural law on this ball of putty, on society. In other words, I guessed, because this is kind of a guessing game here, I guessed that the answer we were looking for wasn't in a bunch of old books, and it wasn't by studying dead philosophers. The answer would be found by studying living society. And so I gave myself a mission of just talking to people from the left, right, and center. My goal was to see what they thought about the world and how to fix it, and to integrate all of these thoughts and opinions into one coherent philosophy. And that's where pentanomics came from, is through probably thousands of conversations, and not of the world's smartest people, but just people, people left, right, and center. And it was just I learned something from every single conversation.
Interesting. Okay.
So let me ask you a quick question. How does that sort of transfer from philosophy to sociology? It's like a sort of
the
two. Yeah.
Well, think of it like an extended conversation. It's a single conversation that happens over the course of now 7 years. And the conversation is with a lot of different people, but it's all going through one head, okay?
Okay.
And the job of this my role in this process wasn't necessarily to have all the ideas, just the opposite. My role was to stop thinking I had the answers and to start thinking that the answers were out there, kind of like the X-Files.
There's no out there out there, just so you know.
Yeah. And so by having the conversation always go through my one head, it became a
Now it's one head. Earlier it was two heads. Now it's one head. Okay.
Yeah. But by having the conversation go through me, it became a chance for me to organize the conversation, even if nobody else understood that it was organized. Like, very few people I talked to knew that I had a degree in philosophy. I was just some guy at the bar at a marketing conference talking about politics. And they would see me having a good conversation, and a respectful conversation, and they'd come and talk with me. And, actually, about 2 years into it, I gave up because it became clear to me that no one was going to change. but then a breakthrough happened. I realized, we don't have to change. We just have to realize that we all have a piece of the puzzle, and here's how the puzzle fits together. So conservatives get to have a fiscally conservative limit on government. Progressives get to have a machinery within that limit that forces government to pursue social justice. Environmentalists get a world full of mature nations that can finally then achieve environmental sustainability, just the way conservatives will have by then achieved fiscal sustainability. And, it all fits if only we take a step back and do the fundamentals right.
Okay. So what's the state of the movement right now?
The state of the movement is we have a website. And we're going to be trying different websites over time. So right now, the best website to go to is probably incentivereform.org, incentivereform.org. And there's a TED Talk there where I am speaking. Now, earlier Jay mentioned that he didn't realize it was me doing that TED Talk, even though he's seen me on video here a number of times. And I've gotten that comment actually, Jay, from other people too. So it's not just you. So apparently I
knew it was you,
Rick.
I knew it was you.
And I sounded more intelligent or something on the TED Talk, and people don't believe it's me. But yes, that is me. and so you can go to incentivereform.org and watch the TED Talk and sign up and join the revolution. And what I'm working now on is a little bit more of a focused movement. You see, the Pentanomic theory and the cap and prioritize proposal and all this stuff, it should theoretically inspire everyone. Left, right, or center should all eventually figure out that, this works for me and it works for everyone else. Let's do it. But there are some people that it kind of connects with more, sooner. And there's two different groups. It's conservatives and it's the moderates. And the conservatives, because the conservatives are already in favor of some kind of cap on government, so they're not afraid of a cap. And step two is prioritizing better, more transparently, and who's against prioritizing. So conservatives, you'd think, could be on this first. And I tried that route, and it turned out that wasn't true. Because too many conservatives in power are so against the government pursuing social justice, even within limits, that they can't make the leap. And so I don't think it's the conservatives that are going to lead this, even though they could. And it's not the progressives, because the progressives, at least the leadership of the progressives, are too against caps. It's too scary for them with their base. So I think it's the moderates, because moderates describe themselves as fiscally conservative and socially progressive at the same time, and that's what cap and prioritize is. We're going to cap government spending, prioritize government spending, and therefore economize government spending. We're going to basically force government to use its resources to help the people who need help most by prioritizing more transparently. It's the transparency that forces that. And that unites left, right, and center, but it's going to be, a moderate movement. So
okay.
I'm the state of the movement is I'm creating a new website called 1millionmoderates.org. It's not up yet, but I think that's our next attempt.
Okay, awesome. So we have to take a final commercial break. When we come back, we are going to hear Rick's rant, and we'll have some final discussion on that. We'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Valgoss here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And as promised, Rick is going to rant for us. We've got the two-minute Rick's rant, and I can't wait to hear what he's going to rant about. Go for it, Rick.
Yeah, I haven't told anyone about this. I'm going to rant today about fiscal conservatives and environmentalists. Okay? Now, those two segments of the population aren't necessarily talked about together because they seem like political enemies. Most environmentalists, you know, the ones who are really serious about it, that's passionate about it, they tend to be on the political left, not always, but they tend to. And most fiscal conservatives, the ones who are really serious about it, where it's their main issue, they tend to be on the political right, or even farther right in a sense, the libertarian right. And so you would think that these two groups are political opponents or enemies or whatever your favorite word is. And that's my rant, is that I don't think they should be. You think about it, conservatives, if they're serious, look at government resources as something to be a lot more responsible with. We don't have infinite money, okay? Maybe we can grow more money by growing the economy over time, but at any one moment in time, we have this much money to spend on things, and we got to use it smarter, okay? We got to use less and use it smarter. And environmentalists are the same thing. They look at the world and say, we have all these resources. There's a lot, but they're limited, darn it. And we got to be smart about how we have to use less, and we have to use them smarter. It's the same darn problem. Fiscal conservatives and environmentalists should be united. They should be saying, look, guys, we're both focusing on the same hard problem, maturity, conservation, economizing, setting limits, living within limits, and making those tough decisions politically viable. They should unite. And the reason they can't unite, or haven't done it yet, I believe, is because the problems are at two different scopes. And here's the big conclusion. Fiscal conservatism is about nations being responsible with their national resources. And environmentalism, done right, done globally, is about we as a species, we the living, being responsible with our resources, ultimately. And think about which problem is easier. Okay, the fiscal conservative problem is easier because having one mature nation is hard enough. To do a global environmental sustainability movement, you have to have a world full of mature. And so I think my call here is for environmentalists to be smart and to say, you know what, we're not going to achieve true global environmental sustainability until we first achieve fiscal sustainability. And so I'm calling on every environmentalist to first and foremost be a fiscal conservative. Join the fiscal conservative movement. You know, call for a spending cap and then prioritizing within that cap and make that happen. And after that happens, after the right sees the left coming on board for fiscal conservatism, then maybe we can talk the right into coming on board with the left for environmental conservatism. And it's all the same problem. There's my rant. What do you think?
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, that's kind of a stretch. I mean, like, I know a lot of environmentalists. I consider myself an environmentalist. Like, I'm not out there, you know, attending rallies anymore. I used to. But, you know, when you say jump on board and be a fiscal conservative, it's like, ugh, really?
Exactly. But it's the same problem. And look, rant part two. The fiscal conservative issue, fiscal conservatism can be measured, okay? We can know down to the dollar how stupid we as a country are being. Whereas with environmental sustainability, it is a little bit fuzzier. We're talking about centuries here. And so it's a little bit fuzzier. And so we can't even get fiscal conservatism done right. That shows you how tough environmental conservatism is.
Well, also, I think there's a challenge because of other ideologies that happen to go along with people who are conservative, fiscal conservatives, and are environmentalists.
Right. Yes.
And you know, the environmentalists are as you suggest, and I agree, are mostly on the left, and they're going to come to the conservatives and say, well, where are you on gay marriage? Where are you on abortion? Mm-hmm. And there they will part company. But here's where they're being stupid: is that to form a political alliance, forget all that other stuff and just work on this one issue and then part company on everything else.
So you're saying...
Well, that's keep in mind.
No, you're right, Jay. It is a political problem. That's the problem right there.
That's what we did when I worked for APAC. And it made sense. It just made sense.
Well, it almost sounds like you're suggesting that we all just join hands and sing Kumbaya.
No, I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm saying when it comes to an issue, as again Rick suggests, is that they should be coming together on this issue.
Are there actual lyrics to Kumbaya, or is it just a...
Yeah, there's lyrics. Yeah, it's Kumbaya, my lord, Kumbaya, Kumbaya, over and over again.
if they want loggerheads on gay marriage and abortion and guns and everything else, you know, have at it. But when it comes to this, Rick is suggesting they come together and they have to.
And now we've got a Beatles song.
Yeah, we do.
A Beatles song?
Come together right now. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, it's a good point. Yeah. I mean, I don't see it happening, honestly, but in theory, what you're saying is true.
If you're a serious environmentalist, first step.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. So all you environmentalists, stick that in your hat and smoke that one. So it's legal.
Come to Colorado and smoke that. There you go.
Okay. So this is the end of our show on Political Fix. If you want to hear past episodes or see more about what we're doing, go to politicalfixradio.com. You can also watch the behind-the-scenes video that we shoot every week, politicalfixradio.com. And if you want to find out more about the movement led by Rick Raddatz, go to incentivereform.org. That's incentivereform.org. We'll be back with you next week. Have a good week from myself, Jay Amernick, and Rick Raddatz. Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vale Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern at politicalfixradio.com.